Penetrations. But don't forget the dykes and the drags, because you take the penetration out the penitentiary without the fags. Grown men running around here penetrating each other and spreading HIV, released back into society and plaguing women with AIDS. But even in hospitalization, there's money to be made. And who can afford to be insured? There's no cure for being poor. Poor people lack foundation, living day to day with no balance. And nothing is guaranteed. Because when you take away a man's security, you strip him of his pride. And that's how he's affected by genocide. Unhappiness leads to a short life. Try living day to day when your housing exceeds your income with two jobs. And having the bare necessities is a blessing in disguise. And you can't take the look of hunger out your baby's eyes. Bill collector on your door, pay one bill, get two more. And owning an automobile is totally out of the question with insurance, taxes, and registration leaves you back on public transportation. And this is how we help to feed this virus called the cis, where ain't nobody benefiting but the rich man and the politician.
10-point system files me away as a menace to society. They say we are gangbangers because we wear baggy jeans with fat laces or no laces. They even group us in different races, dividing our stories when we know we blended together deeper than the rainbow. Target our colors of blue and red, stripes in the flag, the injustice blowing in our face, the colonization of our ancestors' grace, still get fucked by this same white bread who robbed our stars, taking us out of our beds and putting us in padded rooms. Displacing me out of my mood, coming at me rude. You assume and consume my rights. You provoke, you promote me to physically fight. You glorify violence, wearing your guns on hips, persecuting me with your lips. Meanwhile, I take sips and sips of sour milk right from my own mama's womb. You sentence us to either be in prison or in a tomb. Who's you? The gangbangers. Wearing badges and starched suits, abusing me to think I'm no good.
And that's Poe Poets Project by Poor Magazine, a great magazine up in Oakland. More information about that, just give a call to 423-HUFF. We'll put you in touch with them. They're also www.poormagazine.org. We've got breaking stories that you're not going to read elsewhere, kind of like Santa Cruz Indie Media. Really good alternate media, good stuff. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. We're entering the second hour of our twice-weekly show. Call-in number is 427-3772, 427-3772, if you'd like to call in. Let's finish up the interview we were listening to a few moments, actually it's some time ago now, but let's do it.
So I see you also have a newcomer with you. What's your name, sir?
My name's Ricardo Lopez. I'm from Berkeley.
Welcome, Ricardo.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm very interested to hear Radio Free Santa Cruz. I've been on the station there at Radio Free Berkeley, and I know it's a really good idea. I really support this grassroots-based radio, and a lot of the things he was saying about musicians, I was just thinking about other places up and down the coast using that. We had a place, this was in San Diego, where the guy said it was okay for us to play under the awning of his store, and the absentee they went to the absentee landlord, the police did, and got him to say no, we couldn't play there, and would come and harass us, even though the guy in the store would let us play there.
Now, when was the last time you were in San Diego?
Less than a year ago.
Were you there for any length of time?
Yeah, for about 28 months out of 34. I go back and forth because the music between L.A. and San Diego, but my family lives in San Diego, so I have a really good base there to jump on into L.A.
Now San Diego has a street newspaper, Streetlight.
It's really, really good, and a lot of times Street Spirit will reprint their articles. I think they actually broke some major stories nationally in that Streetlight paper.
I know that the management has changed recently from Forrest Nancuro to a new management, but I also know that they were having some concerns about harassing people, as many cities do, for sleeping, even though there are obviously, I would imagine, inadequate shelters or legal places for homeless people to sleep.
As a matter of fact, in San Diego, you're allowed to sleep, theoretically, if the shelters are full, just like many places, but they completely ignore that law and go ahead and still give the people tickets, and then, of course, they get a stay-away order right after that. And so the next place they go, they'll get another stay-away order, and actually in San Diego, the police will tell you to leave town. They tried to tell me to leave town. I told them my whole family lives here. You can't tell me that. I was lucky. Other people don't have it, but I have three lawyers in my family down there, and they went to bat for me. That's the only thing that saved me.
Now, have you ever yourself been cited or tried for sleeping outside?
Yeah, I've been cited for sleeping outside and for playing on the street, but I had the charges dropped.
Now, are they generally in the habit of citing people and then dropping charges? Is that their deal?
No, it's just because I have three lawyers in my family, and on paper, I look like a local down there.
Now, in Santa Cruz and in Santa Barbara, people have tried, and Albany and other places, homeless people have used the necessity defense against sleeping tickets because, of course, if you are outside and you need to sleep, as we all do, that is a greater need than the need of the city to cleanse the streets of homeless people. So what about San Diego? Has there ever been a necessity defense in a trial down there that you remember?
You know, I think people try to use it, but it's very corrupt. There's too much money on the border going over, you know, back and forth. They have really one of the most corrupt police departments. They're always being investigated. It's very similar to the Ramparts thing that was going on in Los Angeles. I think they have had 400 police shootings down there, and not a one of them has ever been investigated thoroughly, and the police were always vindicated. They shot a black football player in the back, and said he was trying to fight them, and the bullet wounds were in the back. The black community got mad, but nothing happened. Honestly, if it'd been Oakland, shit would have burned down.
Now, what about here? How long you been in town, Ricardo?
I'm just visiting some musician friends of mine who came down here. I love Santa Cruz. The first time I came through here, I was riding my bicycle down the Pacific Coast Trail, and Santa Cruz is on it, and I fell in love with the countryside and the people when I came through, so I'm really enjoying it. But I've just been here a couple of weeks, and, you know, I've run into a lot of people that I've met in Berkeley. You know, there's a big interchange between Berkeley and Santa Cruz.
Indoors or outdoors here in Santa Cruz?
Right now, we're lucky enough to have one of the churches up there. Finally, one of the Christian churches stepped up and is letting us all sleep down in their giant parking garage. But I really like these people, but I don't want to say their name because they're kind of doing it unofficially. I don't want to front the people off.
Are you sleeping in a vehicle or are you sleeping outside a vehicle?
We're sleeping outside of a vehicle, but it's really warm. We haven't been rained on, and God bless those people for finally breaking down and doing the Christian thing.
Is it in Santa Cruz city limits?
This is in the, in Berkeley. This is in Berkeley. Here, I've just been riding my bicycle outside of the Santa Cruz city limits and going to sleep.
Yeah, see, here, Jesus apparently doesn't want that for homeless people. Apparently, that's the take that the local priesthood is taking on this issue.
Well, you can't be too careful about the wrong kind of homeless person might come along. Well, thank you, Ricardo, and thank you, Red Fiddler.
Ricardo has a great story, though. Tell our listeners the one about the...
It looks like we aren't going to get that great story, but perhaps next time. Hey, maybe you've got a great story of your own that you wish to bring up. If so, now's the time to bring it up. We actually got a call during the last segment, and the caller was gracious enough to call back or say he was going to call back after the segment was over. So let's see if that actually happens. 427-3772 is the phone number to call. City Council agenda should be out for those who are interested in that aspect of things. Recently, I'm a big movie buff. I spend a lot of time hiding out in the movie theater, and I saw this film, A Beautiful Mind. I don't know if anybody's seen it. It's gotten a lot of praise from critics, but some people aren't praising it. Here's something I read on the Internet, but before I do, let's take this call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. This is Gracious Ed.
Hey there, Gracious Ed.
A.K.A. Bitter.
Bitter Ed. Oh,
yeah.
Well, bitter and gracious. Okay. Graciously bitter, or bitterly gracious.
It was nice to hear Jim Costner, you know. I never hear anything from him that I disagree with. It's frustrating, you know. You've mentioned a number of times over the radio is why don't people, you know, get on the anti-war thing, right? It's strange.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's kind of like, you know, I have coward in me, right? And I don't want to be standing out there alone. You know, it's common sense in a way, and I think maybe a lot of us feel that way.
That's true.
You know, we don't agree with what's going on. We want to be a part of something, but they have us disorganized.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we do it to ourselves. We disorganize ourselves. There's little bitter, little vile infighting and power plays. And it's kind of like Crone, you know. I want to come up with every vile word in my mouth about the guy, you know, doing that, what he did to you. And then putting you, making you wait for 5.5 hours, right, at some old jail somewhere. And
mm-hmm.
It's just disgusting. You know, people think, well, 5.5 hours, that's not much time. Try sitting in a locked cell somewhere for 5.5 hours, then tell me how it's, you know, it's not much. It's cruel, huh?
Well,
for,
yeah.
For city leaders to do that, worrying about some old piece of shit peace park somewhere, you know, it's just mixed up, screwed up priorities.
Well, you know,
let's throw Robert in the slams for 5.5 hours because he might come back.
Well, the societies use jails to put people in fear, just like they, you know, they yep. use stronger punishments like capital punishment to make people afraid. And, you know, there's an argument that you want to deter people from violent activity, you want, in the sense of assaults, you want to deter people from corruption and abuse of public trust. But, of course, it's ironic, the action of jailing someone for essentially non-violent, silent, non-disruptive, symbolic speech. Is itself. Let me finish the sentence because it's a great sentence.
Well, come on, interrupt you.
Hang
up on
me. Yeah, I'm not going to hang up on you.
No.
But I'm going to try to finish the sentence, and that is that kind of action is violent itself, and it is itself kind of a form of fraud. It's a form of corruption, and it's a form of abuse of the public trust. So it's interesting that the very crimes that they want to put people in jail for, that jails maybe legitimately exist for, are actually they're being used as warehouses for the drug war, and you know, instead of other more creative solutions in the society. You can interrupt me now if you want.
No. I was just kidding.
Hey, no, why not?
It just strikes me odd, you know, and we're all separated, we're in fear, you know, and not wanting to do anything, worrying about a peace park, and let's put Robert away for 5.5 hours. You know, a simple thing like raising a hand, it only takes like half of a second, right?
It was very quick. It's... The issue, of course, is why should one even have to do that at city council? And the answer is that, I guess, you know, in a natural process, you're going to have people who have strong feelings, who, you know, agree and disagree. That shouldn't be the basis for us arresting each other. It should be the basis for coming to understand that we need to address some of these issues. And the council has long ago decided it's not going to address these issues and that it's going to, you know, it's standing on its... power not to address these issues. And that hopefully is what we're going to change, both by legal means, by, you know, a federal lawsuit, which I don't think has ever been done with respect to the Santa Cruz City Council. I'm not aware that it has anyway in terms of, you know, its so-called decorum processes. And the issues that really provoked a lot of this, which have to do with the council's refusal to address its own homeless issues task force's resolutions, its own task force to examine the camping ordinance findings, the findings of the United Way Needs Assessment Project, the findings of Community Action Board, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, Peace and Freedom Party, Green Party, you name it. I mean, they've all found the council is essentially engaging in human rights violations by criminalizing homeless people at night when there is no shelter. I mean, and you know, why do they give us such an issue to beat them over the head with? It's not that hard a deal to do what Miami, Florida did, which is they entered into a consent decree which stated police officers will not approach homeless people in public places, for so-called life survival type, life-sustaining misdemeanors, as they call them, unless they have shelter beds available. That they have a shelter bed available, they can tell you, no, you can't sleep in that park, no, you can't camp out there, no, you can't sleep along that sidewalk because we're going to offer you this instead. Actually, I mean, there are questions about that for me, too, but if they had that, my argument would have much less force. There would be, I think, much less concern. But they don't have that. They have nothing. All they have is, you know, the old Rotkin, Cynthia Matthews,
hide-out
or get-out policy. Go ahead.
I thought they had it like an all-time low with Fitzmaurice. You know, there'll be no Nazi salute in here and this and that, and let's exclude Robert, let's kick, you know. It's like, you know, now Crohn is, what, taking orders from...
Fitzmaurice, yeah.
Yes.
Kennedy and Sugar.
Ah,
yeah.
Doesn't he know what he's doing?
No, he doesn't. Unfortunately.
So we really have, a mayor, but really we have a real mayor behind the scenes.
Yeah, you got the shadow mayor and you got the real mayor. But what you really have is someone who's rather insecure in his position. And by the way, Chris, if you're listening out there,
you're a new guy, huh?
You know, you are invited to call in. I mean, it's very nice for Chris to come in and make a quick guest appearance on Free Radio.
Well, that was so blatantly empty. I mean, that was a...
I haven't heard that tape, and I'm hoping Skidmark Bob can get it to me. But Chris doesn't stand a chance, I think, in an open discussion on these issues. And, you know, I would love to see him.
Yeah, he has to kick you out of the city council meeting.
Yeah, he can't deal with that. Or, but he, you know, his problem is he doesn't want to stand up to the rest of the council. I mean, I actually believe...
That is scary.
He probably, although he tends to I think people transform in positions of power, too. I don't think it's good old Chris up there on the city council.
Not anymore.
I think it's, and I really don't. I mean, Catherine Byers is an example. I didn't like her policies. I didn't like her decisions. But most of what she did was not high-handed in terms of how she dealt with the people at city council. Her personality did not radically transform when she got up there. But Crohn seems to be different. And that's maybe it's a male thing. You know, we men get up there and we start getting carried away with the gavel. You know, we get to, you know, you will respect us, and if you don't, the police will throw you out.
We're
you know?
A fellow hairy man.
I guess so.
You know what I'm longing to hear?
Mm-mm.
And I haven't heard her in a long time, is Theodora.
She's
a special soul, and I haven't heard her for a while.
Well, Theodora called into the show a couple months ago, you know.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, I guess it's camp time. Maybe she'll show up at the Board of Stupid Vipers or Supervisors.
Okay. Now, I want to be a part of the press conference too. I hope
press conference for again, remind folks 6:30 on Tuesday in front of City Council, and that's and I invite people to come. And also, you know, I mean, we're going to be doing an organizational meeting probably earlier in the day for those who wish to make presentations at City Council, and that's you know during the oral communications period. You're supposed to be allowed to speak to City Council.
Did
about
I hear
items.
The word oral? The pictures that come to mind.
It's more like anal communications, it looks like, because makes you sick to your stomach. You get indigestion and find yourself a passing gas.
Robert, you know how they say land of the free, home of the brave with the mind molestation when we were little children in schools?
Yeah.
You know what? You know, I know I'm a coward. There's virtually no brave. There's a few, though. You know, and I think of you as one of them. Last Thursday, I missed your show for the first time in eons. John Trudell, baby. John Trudell. And the Bad Dog Band, and what a message that guy has. Oh, God.
Really?
You know, and he told us, I was reading his book, Stick Man. I had to do a book search, right? And what a valuable book that is, Stick Man, John Trudell, Trudell. And he's kind of like a Leonard Peltier in a way, similarities, you know. And he says we all have to speak our truths.
Right.
All have to speak our truths, you know. And that was what Jim Costner was doing in a way.
Yeah, I've heard his name. I don't know much about him, but
the best, baby.
Well, I appreciate your calling in. I'm gonna
thank
roll.
Thank you, Robert.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye bye.
Okay, it's about 6:15. We're in front of Sushi Now near the crosswalk, talking to.
That guy with the dark...
Quicksilver. We'll call you Quicksilver.
Okay.
Quicksilver, what happened to you today?
Okay, today we were walking down the street, cops rolled up next to us, and say, you guys are out of place. You guys are out of place, because we weren't here. Like, we were walking down... You guys are out of place.
You weren't at the Sushi Now New Leaf Market area.
Yeah, we were walking down the street by Foster's, and they stopped and, like, actually said, oh, you guys are out of place here. What are you guys doing here?
Right.
It's kind of, you know, I'm out of place nowhere.
Right.
I'm on Earth.
Yeah.
So you know what I'm saying? This is my place, all this, man.
So who was the police officer who made this inquiry?
That tall standing guy?
The tall, younger one that works during the day.
Officer Klein?
Maybe?
Not sure. Military.
Yeah, taller, younger.
Military, younger fellow.
Yeah.
Was there anything further, or would you just make this remark?
Oh, I believe he harassed some other kids. Like, not me, because I have no reason to harass me, but, like, other kids said that he fucking rode up on them. And
any tickets?
He probably gave, I don't know.
This is your foster?
Me, it did. He didn't give us a ticket there. He was just, like, harassing us, you know? You guys are out of a place. How was that?
So, you were also a witness to this?
To that?
Yeah. Or this was something else you saw?
That was something else.
What happened with you?
It didn't happen to me, but I was sitting right there. I witnessed everything. There was like four people standing here.
By here, you mean near the crosswalk near Sushi Now?
Standing, just talking, not playing hacky sack, not doing anything. And the cop came up and was like, the next time I have to tell you to move, you're getting a ticket.
Okay, now, when was this?
And I hadn't recalled him saying to them at all today to move. That was today around, I'd say 3.
And you know which police officer this was?
The big chubby one on a bike, Swanick.
Really, not Sergeant Baker. It was Officer Swanick.
I can't say that for sure. I don't know who it was, but the fat one on a bike.
Short, stocky, dark-haired man.
That sounds like Sergeant Baker, but I could be wrong. Sergeant Baker wears shorts a lot.
Yeah, it was Baker.
Okay.
Swanick may too. I don't know.
Swanick's a long guy.
But now you were. He told you were blocking the sidewalk. He told you you were. What they were doing?
He didn't really come up and say anything, but it was the way he was sitting there, staring, and everybody was like, okay, you know, we'll move. So they moved like a little bit that way, and he's like, next time I have to tell you this, I'm giving you a ticket.
I see.
It was totally just. I
the police have power in this town. What's wrong with you, woman?
What? What'd you say?
The police, they have the power. You will down on your knees. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
We're in front of the Starbucks coffee talking to an intrepid, I don't want to say a salesperson, but a man with some very nice looking hand-blown glass pipes. How's it going with this?
Oh, it's going pretty good. You know, I've sacrificed my sanity and, you know, my better way of living to pursue my art dreams, which fortunately are paying me enough to keep my dream alive. That's about it. Definitely not rich.
Have you been making these pipes and selling them?
Oh my God, way too long. I don't even want to say, because if I think about it, I'm still in the same boat I was in 4 years ago. But at least I'm a good glassblower now. It's all about getting fat in the torch.
Are you a Santa Cruzan for the last 4 years?
No, last 2 years.
And has the situation changed on the streets at all since then?
Actually, you know, it sort of hasn't. It's sort of remained the same. It's not good. I mean, this is like, this town is basically, the only thing I'll say, but I think, is an earthquake, because what you have now is just, you know, a bunch of really severely uptight people that for some reason want to live in a hippie town and turn it into Naziville or some shit. I don't even understand it, but these people, they're just basically wait for an earthquake.
Now, what kinds of things have you seen that have concerned you in the last few weeks?
Well, what's really concerned me is the fact that, it's not so much, it's like all the little things, you know, it's just the looks on people's faces just drive me bananas. This town is really annoying on that note, you know, and it's like you got these people driving around, you know, in the middle of the day, tons of traffic, right? And they're like all upset with all these people in the way, yet their brand new, you know, Pathfinder and everything is paid for by all these renters that are paying through the nose to rent the property that the grandma gave them in 1973. And so now they're totally rich, but they're upset because there's all these people in the way as they're driving. You know, where are all these people coming from? It's like they want their cake, but they, you know, they want to have their cake and eat it too. If it was not crowded like this, they would not be driving a new car. They would not be rolling up $86,000 a month in property that's been paid off 20 years ago, you know? But you go out at night, you go out at 10 o'clock at night, there ain't a car on the road to save your life. And even if you have a valid driver's license, insurance, and registration, and there's nothing illegal in your car, the police tell you that they do not like to see you driving around after 11 o'clock.
Has that happened to you?
No, but it's happened to my friend. See, I don't drive because I don't have a valid license, and I've been pulled over too many times and lost way too many vehicles here to even attempt it. So,
how many vehicles have you lost?
Three.
And what was the reason you initially lost your driver's license?
Because I, well, basically I had one, but it ran out in Colorado, and then I go to renew it with my $40 over here, and they said I have a ticket from Massachusetts and New Hampshire from 1989, which was originally $100 and $68, but it's now like $700 and something because it's racked up all this interest over the past 12 years, which they didn't even tell me about in Colorado. They gave me my license just fine and dandy, and like an idiot, I let it expire and even attempted trying to get a license here, and they're like, we want $800. And I'm like, well, shit, you know, my car costs $500, so I don't really think I have that kind of money. And, you know, basically the police here, you know, unless you know them and shit, they're going to pull you over, like, a lot.
Now, are you actually living in Santa Cruz? Are you indoors, outdoors?
Well, no, I'm upper middle class homeless. See, I pay $400 to blow glass on this lady's porch, and out of the kindness of her heart, she lets me park my van on the street in front of her house, which I've...
Illegally park your van.
Well, no, it's I pay $400 a month for that privilege, and I sleep in my van, which I've been sleeping in for the past 6 months in front of her house, and I do reckon the cops know who she is and basically won't knock on my window, because then I'd have to wake her ass up at 3 o'clock in the morning to ask her to back my van into the driveway, since I pay $400 a month and still sleep in my van.
Be careful, because it is illegal to A, park on a public street and sleep there at night, even if you have the permission of the person whose house you're in, and B, if you have the permission of the owner to sleep in their driveway in a vehicle, they cannot do it for any financial reason. So just a word to the wise. Sorry about that.
You can't do it for any financial reasons.
It is illegal under the current camping ordinance.
See, I get to sleep for free. I pay for the glass blowing on the porch.
I'm sorry. Yeah, we have to clarify that.
Right. Yeah, so that's why I really would like to move the hell out of here, but I can't go anywhere without my driver's license, and that's why I'm still here, trying to hustle up enough money on the curbs on my glass in order to buy my license back.
Do you wish to give your name for Free Radio Santa Cruz or not?
No, actually, I would not like to give my name due to the fact that
we'll
I've just...
call you Black Cap.
Oh, look. Well, you can call me Peanut.
Hey, Peanut's good. At least you're not as cracked as some, Peanut. Thank you very much. If people want your work, is there a place you want? Are you just around? Or
No, we're international. You can check us out online at www.plumpglassworkswithax.com.
And there you have it, an unsolicited commercial announcement. And we'll block the police officer's approach here. And we have a police officer, it's Officer Brandt, driving by in his vehicle.
Yes. Over there.
See you later. Thank you, Peanut. He's coming, he's going, and we'll see what happens when the officer arrives. So, James...
I think he's actually going to harass someone with lights and lights.
So, you yourself... have had a problem with your driver's license. Another police officer coming up.
Yeah, I have.
And what you're about to hear is an interview with activist James Ney, who made a lot of hay way back in 2000 in April when he was able to bring several dozen young people to city council after spending many hours a week on the streets organizing against the sleeping ban. In favor of the initiative being sought by activist David Silva. He was part of the Pie and the Pusser Award ceremonies that we sought and determined the most eligible, worst council member at that time. It turned out to be none other than council member Rotkin. And we offered him a pie for his pusser. He refused to accept it, so we had a stand-in do the Pie and the Pusser acceptance. That was me. But James Ney was there, and he was actually arrested at that city council meeting where that happened. He was arrested, selectively targeted in advance by Mayor Sugar, and what was acknowledged apparently by Sergeant Vogel. He was arrested. Sugar had said before, there's any problem, go arrest James Ney. And Sugar did the same thing Crone did. He cut off oral communications early, before the time was up. Everybody was objecting. And he simply went to Ney and had him arrested and dragged out and then called a recess. And Ney was held for an hour or so in the back room of the city council where there were, he counted, at least 22 police officers. And actually, Ney is going to appear on a segment of Club Cruise with me on this issue that is going to be aired in about a month or sometime in the next few weeks, which we talk about the abusive processes at city council as they affect activists, particularly homeless activists, but actually affect the entire community. But Ney here is going to be talking about his own life and his own situation and how laws around, let's say, driver's licenses can really screw people up. I mean, we talk about the sleeping ban, which is an obvious kick in the chops to poor people, but there are lots of other laws that screw poor folks over.
I supposedly went to court and took care I owed for driving without a license. They rejected, took away my license for child support I didn't owe. So I go to court, so I get two tickets for driving without a license. I get fines for it. I go to court, I prove I don't owe the money. I finally go to court and I do 5 days and the judge tells me there's two fines. I tell him I can't pay him. Would he please convert them to community service? So he says he's converting 1 to 5 days in jail and the other one to community service. So I do my 5 days in jail. I do my community service.
And the tape is turning over, so don't go away. We'll continue this interview.
Go back a step or two. You said that you got two fines.
Two fines. Couldn't pay them, so finally the judge, 1 in the morning, got taken to jail, went into court, and the judge says he's converting the two fines, 1 to 5 days in jail and 1 to community service. I did my 5 days in jail. I'm almost done with my community service. I get a notice in the mail saying there's a warrant for my arrest for not starting payments on the second fine on the first of the year, or January 21st.
Right.
I said, because I went down to get my license, because here it's supposed to be clear again. So I go to get my license. They say no. So I call Santa Cruz. They say, oh, no, that's 5 days in jail and community service for the one fine.
Right.
Okay? And I says, no, it's for the both. So I can test it. I go to Irwin's court, Irwin Shaw's court room today. It's the 20th of March. And I say, I was just hearing you. And he says, well, no, that was just for one of them. He says, so I'll give you community service for this one. So now it gives me another 81 hours of community service to do. But I have to pay $75 for the right to do community service. Not that I'm a regular volunteer here. I volunteer with Valley Churches Community Resources. But I can't use any of that. I have to go pay them $75 for the right to go where I'm already volunteering.
Now let me ask you this. Do you have documentation on the first occasion both of these were supposedly for community service?
Yes.
And did you present this documentation to Commissioner Irwin?
Yes.
Commissioner Joseph?
Yeah, Joseph.
Irwin is his first name,
first
Joseph
name.
Is his
Irwin
last name.
Joseph, that's it, yeah.
And what did he say when you presented this documentation?
He said, well, no, that I still owed this second fine and that I was going to do 81 hours of community service for it. And I said, well, fine, I'll go do more community service.
Well,
but then it's what he said at that point that really upsets me, because at that point I've done nothing wrong. I was in his court at the end of December and this went on, and now he says January 21st. So then he says, but you failed to pay on January 21st, the first payment, so your punishment for that is a $100 fine that I have to pay within the next 60 days, cash to the court. On top of the 81, so I have 81 hours more on top of the 90 hours I've already done a community service, plus 5 days in jail, plus now a $100 fine too.
And of course you're working at night at a service station.
Right? $8 an hour, two kids at home, one in juvenile hall, I have to pay support for that too. And now this welfare thing's back that's saying I owe this, which was $1,800 originally, beat twice in court. Now the third time it's $46,000.
Well, inflation.
Oh, yeah. And when I call and talk to the DA's office, of course, I say, well, when is my children going to get this money? DA says, oh, none of this money is for your children. It's all for the state.
Back to you later, folks.
It's about 9:25. We're down here at, I guess this is Cooper and Pacific talking with
Church Street.
It's Church. Actually,
yeah.
Cooper's over there. Again, we are at Church.
Yeah.
Right, right. But not in Church, yet you are of a church.
We are Church on the Street.
And what's your name?
Dan Adams.
And Dan, you do this every Wednesday night?
Yes, I do.
Looks like you got a kind of a mobile cart here with some, is that noodles?
We got two big pots of soup. We usually give it all out, cookies. And food, we give out the gospel of Jesus Christ and pray with people, talk with people.
How long does this usually distribution go on for?
About an hour and a half.
Starts at
8:30 to 10.
And you... No hassles from police or downtown association?
No. I talked to an officer a few weeks back, and he didn't say anything.
How long have you been doing this?
Oh, about 4 years.
And every night, every Wednesday for four years?
Yes.
Wow.
Rain or shine, we're here.
And how can folks help if they want to? How can they donate?
Well, the brother and sister that make the soup, they could donate to them if they wanted to, because a lot of times it's out of our pocket that the soup is made, and a lot of times out of theirs. So.
And is there a number they should call, or should we just, maybe we should say if anybody wants to get in touch with, and again the name of the group is?
I just called it Santa Cruz Street Ministries.
Just contact HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Call 423-HUF, and we'll put you in touch with the Santa Cruz Street Ministries.
Yes. That's good.
Cool. Thank you.
All right. Keep up
the good work.
You bet.
And that's what's cooking out there. There are some folks who are actually feeding people. Food Not Bombs does it 3 times a week, and if you want to get in touch with them and volunteer, Monday, 4 o'clock, Loudon Nelson they feed. Wednesday, 4 o'clock, Farmers Market. Saturday, 2 o'clock, Town Clock. And they need help working to prepare the food, and no doubt they need help making the food pickups. So give a call. Grab a pencil if you want the phone number for Food Not Bombs. I don't know if it's actually listed with information, but here it is coming up at you. It's 515, there's a strange prefix, 515-4480, and then extension 6654. Again, 515-4480, extension 6654 for Food Not Bombs, which serves 3 times weekly of vegan food. I heard someone complaining the other day that there's a lot of food up at the university, and that it would be available. Food Not Bombs was even offered it if it wanted to distribute it, but it had meat, so Food Not Bombs wouldn't touch it. Of course, my suggestion is that an organization that wants to distribute food with meat get up there and do it, but of course we don't have such an organization right now. Perhaps it's time for folks out there to go form one. That's just as soon as we stop the war and restore basic civil rights in Santa Cruz and in the United States, which would be a nice idea. And I'm still up for folks interested in peace projects. You know, give a call to 423-HUF if you want to do some tabling for peace, tabling against the civil rights violations in Santa Cruz. And you know, some of this may hopefully come out of the conference in May, which is going to be happening May 3rd and the 4th. And then we'll be having, of course, a meeting at a press conference on Tuesday, May 26th, the City Council, where we'll be announcing a lawsuit against the City Council. And against, I believe it's against Mayor Crone as well. We have a situation where actually the mayor signed a citizen's arrest, so he's actually personally liable. There was no real disturbance of the peace that the police felt warranted any kind of arrest. Police Officer Sergeant Baker was looking directly at me as I gave this brief salute. He obviously didn't feel it was sufficiently disruptive to be in violation of Penal Code 403, which is what I was charged with and held in jail for and faced a $1,000 fine and a year in jail for prosecution, which I hopefully will see dropped, but again, not yet. So far as I know, prosecution hasn't been dropped. Let me turn again to this film I was talking about, A Beautiful Mind, and the analysis of the Support Coalition International, which is an advocacy group for those who've been victimized by the psychiatric system. And here's what they write on their news release from March 6th. The film, A Beautiful Mind, has an ugly distortion, advocacy group claims. Public statement calls for apology and clarification from Universal Studios. USA Today commentary reveals that John Nash, that's the protagonist of the film, A Beautiful Mind, that's a film about a scientist who starts having delusions that he's some big agent and is working out some massive conspiracy. And he fights it and he gets back into functionality, but he stops taking drugs, the psychiatric drugs that they have him on. Hollywood, California, claiming that the film A Beautiful Mind distorts the life of John Nash, a coalition of 100 mental health advocacy groups issued a public statement today to Universal asking for an apology and retraction. Support Coalition International cites a guest commentary in USA Today by author Robert Whitaker. Whitaker claims Nash refused psychiatric drugs, and this may have aided his recovery. The film has Nash saying that he was taking newer medications at the time of his Nobel Prize. Nash says that's pure fiction. Nash has also been quoted recently as wondering if the fact that one screenwriter's mother is a psychiatrist has anything to do with this distortion. Whether or not people can recover following a diagnosis of, quote, schizophrenia without taking psychiatric drugs is a major controversy in the mental health field. Support Coalition International says that Universal, along with Imagine and DreamWorks film companies, apparently caved to pressure and distorted Nash's life so as not to overly disrespect psychiatric drugs. Psychologist Barry Duncan, Ph.D., author of the book The Heroic Client, says the film can actually harm people diagnosed with psychiatric disorders and the public. Says Dr. Duncan, by all accounts, Nash took no antipsychotic medications after 1970. The right message crafted in the film and promulgated in reviews and echoed by experts, so-called right message, do those suffering and the public a great disservice. Below is the public statement that Support International issued to Universal Studios. The film A Beautiful Mind has an ugly distortion. Author, actually I'm reading the same thing again. Let me make sure I've, here we go. This is by Robert Whitaker, and it's a commentary from USA Today. Mind drugs may hinder recovery. The movie A Beautiful Mind, nominated for 8 Academy Awards, has brought welcome attention to the fact that people can and do recover from schizophrenia, a severe disabling disorder that affects about 1 in 100 Americans. Unfortunately, the film fabricates a critical detail of John Nash's recovery, and in so doing obscures a question that should concern us all. Do the medications we use to treat schizophrenia promote long-term recovery or hinder it? In the movie, Nash, just before he receives a Nobel Prize, speaks of taking newer medications. The National Alliance for the Mentally Ill has praised the film's director, Ron Howard, for showing the, quote, vital role of medication in Nash's recovery. But as Sylvia Nassar notes in her biography of Nash, on which the movie is loosely based, this brilliant mathematician stopped taking antipsychotic drugs in 1970 and slowly recovered over 2 decades. Nassar concluded that Nash's refusal to take drugs may have been fortunate because their deleterious effects would have made his gentle reentry into the world of mathematics a near impossibility. His is just one of many such cases. Most Americans are unaware that the World Health Organization has repeatedly found that long-term schizophrenia outcomes are much worse in the U.S. and other developed countries than in poor ones, such as India and Nigeria, where relatively few patients are on antipsychotic medications. In, quote, underdeveloped countries, nearly two-thirds of schizophrenic patients are doing fairly well 5 years after initial diagnosis. About 40% have basically recovered. But in the USA and other developed countries, most patients become chronically ill. The outcome differences are so marked that World Health Organization concluded that living in a developed country is a strong predictor that a patient never will fully recover. Myth of medication. There is more. In 1987, psychologist Courtney Harding reported that a third of chronic schizophrenia patients released from Vermont State Hospital in the late 1950s completely recovered. Even in this best outcomes group, it shared one common factor. All had weaned themselves from antipsychotic medications. The notion that schizophrenics must spend a lifetime on these drugs, she concluded, is a myth. In 1994, Harvard Medical School researchers found that outcomes for U.S. schizophrenia patients had worsened during the past 20 years and were now no better than they were 100 years ago, when therapy involved plunking patients into bathtubs for hours. And in 1998, University of Pennsylvania investigators reported that standard antipsychotic medications cause a specific area of the brain to become abnormally enlarged, and that this drug-induced enlargement is associated with a worsening of symptoms. Comprehensive care succeeds. All of this has led a few European physicians to explore non-drug alternatives. In Finland, doctors treat newly diagnosed schizophrenia patients with comprehensive care, counseling, social support services, and the selective use of antipsychotic medications. Some patients do better on low doses of medications and some without it, and they report great results. A majority have remained free of psychotic symptoms for extended periods and hold down jobs. John Nash's recovery from schizophrenia is a moving story, but we are not well served when the movie fibs about the antipsychotic drug's role in his recovery. If anything, his story should inspire us to reconsider antipsychotics' long-term efficacy with an honest, open mind. That would be a first step towards reforming our care, and if there is one thing we can conclude from the World Health Organization studies, it is that reform is vitally needed. Perhaps then we could even hope that schizophrenia outcomes in this country would improve to the point that they were equal to those in poor countries such as India and Nigeria. That's by Robert Whitaker, who is the author of Mad in America, Bad Science, Bad Medicine, and the Enduring Mistreatment of the Mentally Ill. It's an interesting email. And there's actually more on that subject, but I think the point is made. And it has to do a lot with homeless people here, too, because homeless people are often stigmatized, some of them, as being mentally ill nutcases who just need to be forced to take their meds or be hospitalized in order to deal with their problems. And that's really their, you know, the key thing we should all be working for. And in many cases, that just simply isn't true. In fact, some say it's generally not true. Here's actually another story from Los Angeles. The Citizens Commission on Human Rights, an international psychiatric watchdog group, says that underlying the controversy about A Beautiful Mind, again, the movie we've been talking about, John Nash, is an ugly agenda, one aimed at garnering billions more in drug sales and research funds. The movie alters the most remarkable element that led to John Nash's recovery, his refusal to continue psychiatric treatment and drugs, thereby changing the entire success of what Nash was able to accomplish. The film portrays Nash as taking, quote, newer medications at the time of his Nobel Prize, which wasn't true. Nash himself says this is pure fact fiction. He hadn't taken, looks like I'm reading the same stuff here earlier, but let me jump ahead. Two of the newer medications that dominate the treatment of schizophrenia are a more than $5 billion a year industry. The consequences of this current cinematic glorification of psychiatric drugs will inevitably lead, as it has in the past, to escalating psychotropic drug consumption on this community. While Hollywood has been attacked for its violent movies begetting violence, more recently the target has changed to demanding that its portrayal of mental illness fits rigidly within the psychiatric drug model. In March 2000, a coalition of psychiatric community groups formed as the Mental Health Coalition Against Stigma in Hollywood, calling on the White House to use its influence with the entertainment industry to help lead a challenge to the stigmatization of mental illness in movies and television shows. The coalition approached the National Mental Health Awareness Campaign, headed by Tipper Gore, and liberally funded by pharmaceutical interests. Gore awarded director Ron Howard with its Awareness Award for A Beautiful Mind. Members of the coalition group, along with NARSA, the National Alliance for Research on Schizophrenia, groups that have been acknowledged in relation to the story, are heavily funded by drug interests. So the real drug war might be against our pharmaceutical companies, our alcohol companies, and our tobacco industry. What a concept. Psychiatry has long refused to accept and suppressed workable non-drug treatments to overcome mental difficulties, even of the severity experienced by John Nash. In the 1970s, psychiatrist Lauren Mosher, chief of schizophrenic research for the National Institute of Mental Health, established a drug-free program, Soteria House, for schizophrenic patients. The idea was that schizophrenia can often be overcome with the help of meaningful relationships rather than with drugs. And such treatment would eventually lead to unquestionably healthier lives, Mosher said. Between 85 and 90% of the acute and long-term clients were able to return to the community without use of conventional hospital treatment. But like A Beautiful Mind, this amazing accomplishment was buried and discredited. According to Mosher, by 1980, I was removed from my post altogether. All of this occurred because of my strong stand against the overuse of medication and disregard for a drug-free psychological intervention to treat psychological disorders. Too many psychiatrists and pharmaceutical interests were allowed input and special access to this movie. Psychiatrists and their front organizations have their own agenda in utilizing the Hollywood set as a means of financing their movement. This propaganda covers up psychiatry's created problem, the growing dependency our culture has on prescribed psychotropic drugs that can cause violent and suicidal tendencies. Depression, impotence, and at least one of the newer psycholeptics can cause a deadly blood disorder. Nash believes that he willed his own recovery. So why invent a fictitious ending when the truth is so much more inspiring? Certainly John Nash deserves better than that. The CCHR, Citizens Commission on Human Rights, is a social reform group established by the Church of Scientology. With 33 years of exposing psychiatric abuses and no doubt creating some of its own and reforming the field of mental health. I actually agree with Scientologists on this issue, though I generally think they are probably as bad as some of the psychiatrists they criticize in terms of their control systems and their hype. We are at the end of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I want to thank you for having joined us tonight, and I want to invite you to stay with us for the next show, which is run by the infamous Uncle Dennis. He will not be regaling you with propaganda about the Redwoods for once. No, it's going to be from the cream to the dregs. I'm the cream, of course. He is the dregs. Not so familiar music from the 60s and 70s. And it might be a nice change, although we hope it isn't just easy listening like some of those AM stations. I assume not. I rarely listen to the radio myself, but perhaps tonight I will tune in to Uncle Dennis's show. I'm going to give him a little seguing here. I'm going to play some tracks from the Poe Poets Project. Actually, we'll do some... I think instead we'll do actually some musical output as Barbara Anderson on The Naked Truth from her album Evening's Bed, and give Dennis a chance to replace me at the mic. Tune in again on Sunday at 10 o'clock in the morning, and I'll be back. If you want to chat between shows, 423-HUFF, 423-4833 is the number to call, and we'll do it that way. Thanks for being with us. Come back again and stay with us for Dennis' show.
Celebrating the earth that we share. Move and move and la 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 la
la. All right, Barbara Anderson. Let's see, Evening's Red, Evening's Bed. Yeah, which one did you play?
Moving.
Wasn't that nice? And, you know, we'd like to say, keep right on moving, Robert. And see if you can get something done about that neuromuscular defect in your right arm.
Heil Crohn.
Heil Crohn. Anyway, take care and stay out of trouble. Okay. Anyway, Robert Norris. Always interesting, never dull, and of course, you just wish he would leave sometimes. He will be back. That is the good news or the bad news, depending on how you look at it. This Sunday morning at 10 a.m. until 1:30, a good 3.5 hours of Bathrobe Pierre's broadsides, as always, right here on Freak Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM. I'm Uncle Dennis. We're in the studio tonight till about 11 o'clock. We're going to play rarely heard music from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. It's called From the Cream to the Dregs. And, of course, we're going to turn it all upside down right now and start with the dregs. At least I thought we were.